Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com, and you are tuned into the Geneva Business Insider, where we talk on a monthly basis to our friend David L. Smith of the Geneva Business Insider blog about everything, about life, the universe, everything, but more specifically about news, geopolitical, social, economic, and otherwise. And as I always start out by saying, there's never a lack of things to talk about. So many, many things lined up on the plate for this conversation. But first of all, let's introduce him here into the program, our co-host David Smith. Thank you again for your time. As always, how are things in Geneva today, David?
Well, today is kind of wet and damp, and the winter is beginning to come. So we had the wine festivals last weekend, and it now feels that the hangover of winter is about to come.
You know, that's kind of my image of Geneva, and I don't know why that is, but at any rate, I'm glad to hear that reality lines up with my imagination. All right, okay, well, as I say, we have so much to get into this month, and there are so many things taking place around the world, Ebola and protests and all sorts of things making headlines, but as we are wont to do here on this program, we want to drill down and find some of the stories that perhaps are not on people's radar, but maybe should be for various reasons. And so this month, I wanted to start out with an interesting story about Libya's sovereign wealth fund, the Libyan Investment Authority, and an ongoing legal case that it has with Goldman Sachs. Surprise, surprise. So we can take this, for example, from the Libya Herald, which has a headline, "Opening Salvos in Libya's $1 Billion Goldman Sachs Suit," from the 6th of October, which notes, "The Libya Investment Authority today began its $1 billion high court action in London against U.S. investment bank Goldman Sachs, alleging that it was duped into investing in complex derivatives, the value of which was wiped out in the international financial meltdown triggered by the American subprime crisis. Between January and April of 2008, Goldman set up for the LIA a portfolio of investments in Citibank parent Citigroup, Electricité de France, Banco Santander, the insurer Allianz, Italian oil company Eni, and Italian bank UniCredit. Today, lawyers for the LIA claimed in court that it had thought that these were straightforward share purchases, when in fact they were complex derivative bets that were only based on the underlying shares. Much of the investment disappeared in the financial crash." And we can get even more information about this, for example, from Dealbook, where they talk about the fact that when a lawyer for Allen & Overy went to Tripoli in 2008 to work with the LIA on this deal, she asked what due diligence they had done, and they said, "Do what?" Which is probably a sign that you're about to be swindled in a big way. David, I want your take on this. The swindlers of all swindlers dealing with the Sovereign Wealth Fund of Libya, surprise, surprise, ripping them off. Should we be surprised by this story, and what does it really tell us about the way Goldman Sachs operates?
Well, I think it's a lovely story. The LIA fund, or the Liar Fund for short. It is more of the same. I've been involved in quite a lot of selling these sort of structured package funds, more in private equity than investment funds, and they are very complicated things. Normally speaking, you have a guy called the gatekeeper who is the one who's doing the review to see whether the investment that is being proposed makes sense. But, of course, you can bypass all of these things, especially if you're a sovereign fund and you're accountable to nobody but the people. Because, as we all know, the people, no one's accountable to the people in the world anymore. And I suppose under Gaddafi's regime, that would have been particularly prevalent. Now, what commissions were made on it, what occult money was moved to different places, we will never know. But the issue of the documentation of funds like this, they run to hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pages of small print, and they should be crawled all over by the lawyers representing the investor. And these things are usually subject, especially with a dedicated fund, to detailed line-by-line negotiation between the lawyers and advisors on the side of the investor and of the investee. So That is a typical way of doing it. Then after that, the money is subscribed and things are invested in accordance with the policy stated. Now, I feel very sorry for Libya if what they've done is they've given carte blanche to Goldman Sachs to do whatever they want, because even if you try and tie Goldman Sachs up in knots, I mean, squids have a tendency of being able to wriggle out of most of the knots that you put around them. At least they have enough hands to untie the Gordian knot that is actually placed upon them. So where is this going to end up? I don't know. A billion is a lot of money to some, but not a lot to others. I mean, the total amounts of money that were, I think, in the foreign reserves of Libya were something of the order of a couple of hundred billion. So a billion loss is unfortunate, but not the end of the world. What we should remember, of course, is where did the Libyan gold go? Because all the indications are that that was stolen by the Western powers and has never been seen again. And there was probably more money than a billion involved in that, because that only accounts for, maybe 20 tons of gold or some 20, 25 tons of gold. So it's an interesting story, but it just goes to show that all of these international banks, when they go to a country, they're not in the least bit interested in all of these wonderful stories about helping the country, investing their money, trying to help them develop. They're interested in taking the money they can get their hands on, using and abusing it in the best way possible. And, of course, the other thing that no one ever really looks at too seriously is who is on the winning side of all these tragically losing trades that actually took place, where Goldman was trading in derivatives instead of the real shares. No doubt that will be held in offshore structures all over the place. And I'd be very surprised if Goldman saw none of the profits on the other side of the deal.
Well, this brings up the sort of two different issues that you talked about. First is the raping and plundering of Libya in connection with, of course, the NATO takeover and bombing of that country. But I think the other part of this, of course, is Goldman and its history of doing things like this, and the fact that, of course, it wasn't just the LIA fund, the liar fund, as you say, it wasn't just them that got caught up in this. It was a lot of different investment vehicles, including back in 2012, the Dutch Transport Pension Fund sued Goldman Sachs as a result of Goldman Sachs Asset Management's decisions while they were the fiduciary manager for that pension fund. And of course, I mean, we could go back into Goldman Sachs history and find all sorts of examples of this. But I think probably the most important with regards to this story in particular is the fact that it's admitted now and absolutely 100% mainstream news from the New York Times, for example, from December 2009, banks bundled bad debt, bet against it, and won, talking about the strategy that the banks used in the run-up to the subprime crash, which was to bundle their CDO toxic derivative crap, sell it to their customers, and then bet against it. And that's what they did time and time again, and it sounds exactly like what happened to the LIA fund. So perhaps just par for the course for the vampire squid. This seems to be the actual strategy that was used to run up the bank's overall wealth in the run-up to the subprime crash, which of course resulted in mega bailouts for the banks. Sounds like win-win-win-win for the banks.
Well, just look at what happened in Greece. It was the same thing there. I mean, they window dressed the Greek debt situation and then bet against that as well. So, there is no shame in conflict of interest. The only thing that Goldman seems to want to do is to seek situations where conflicts of interest clearly exist and profit from them, and profit from the fact that the American regulators, they're untouchable in the eyes of the American regulators. And the recent recordings that have come out regarding the Fed and the conversations about Goldman by Fed officials show the feeling of impotence or subservience to the companies, which the American government and its various administrative branches should be actually regulating. The people who are in there are concerned there is a small element, I think, of the guy who's in the regulator doesn't want to screw up the actual business operations, which is okay. But regulators are there to have a healthy conflict of interest between themselves and the people they're regulating. But to go to from that to subservience to a regulatory capture where they know perfectly well if they play the cards right, they're going to get a job earning five times more money for services rendered a few years later. It is all just part of a corrupt system. And then, of course, the vast amounts of monies made by the Goldman Sachs find their way into party fund contributions and re-election campaigns and support of the unsupportable. So it is business as usual. It's the American business model exported to Libya, and it's just one manifestation amongst hundreds of others.
It certainly is. So at any rate, we can put this on that data graph as one of the points that connect and make a bigger picture. And again, I don't think that this needs to be spelled out in exhausting, endless detail, because I think, again, we know this is the sine qua non of these banks and the way they operate. But let's address the other side of that, what you raised, talking about Libya and the plundering of that country in the invasion. Of course, we have the official story that we can get from places like Fox News. Libya's loot. South African banks may hold $1 billion in gold diamonds stolen by Gaddafi. Talking about how, you know, Libyan strongmen had bundled off $1 billion in loot to South Africa for safekeeping during the crisis or what have you, and it may just be lingering there. I think that's the official story, but then we have the other alternative side of that story, which was that Gaddafi was actually planning on introducing the gold dinar as a African currency, an Africa-wide currency, backed up by gold, made from gold, apparently this was happening in the months leading up to the actual invasion itself. This we can get from example from RT, saving the world economy from Gaddafi, talking about how Gaddafi did not give up. In the months leading up to the military intervention, he called on African and Muslim nations to join together to create this new currency, the gold dinar, that would rival the dollar and euro. They would sell oil and other resources around the world only for gold dinars. So this is a story that, again, I'm not sure where this is sourcing from or how reliable is this story, but what's your take on the way that the Libyan economy was treated and the reasons for that invasion in the first place?
Well, I think take one step back for a moment. If you read an article there saying that the $1 billion was held in South Africa was stolen from Libya. Well, no one actually mentions the $1 billion which had been stolen from Libya by Goldman Sachs by their rig trading practices, which eliminated all of the money. In addition, South Africa is the most stable country in the African continent. It was the one that Libya supported the most during its pre-independence days and when Mandela was in prison. And it seems entirely logical that money and assets should be held there. In the same way as if we take a look at the Western world, we say, well, it's perfectly all right that the British gold or German gold is sitting in a bank account in the Federal Reserve in New York. But all of a sudden, when it happens to be Gaddafi, it's stolen. Now, the other question I'd have is, if you're a dictator in a country which you regard as your own, why do you actually need to steal anything? Because it's all yours anyway. So this is Western media misrepresenting flagrantly the situation. Now, as far as the gold currency situation is concerned, yes, Gaddafi did more than float that idea. He was actually actively promoting it in the Union of African States at their conferences and so on. And the only time you can actually recommend a gold standard and have any chance of surviving with your life is when you're a nuclear power. You know, if you happen to be a simple, you know, Bedouin in the desert with a bit more money and a bit more oil than someone else, then you're immediately attackable by the forces of liberty and freedom that come down on you from a great height with 500 kilo bombs. So, and anything that shows any signs of trying to break the power of the petrodollar has in the past been dealt with extremely severely. And if you look at it from the Americans' point of view, they have to do that. They cannot allow it to break apart, because if the petrodollar and the U.S. dollar reserve currency status collapses, then America collapses with it. It's as simple as that. And what we're seeing now are very powerful forces which are working on doing that. But for Gaddafi, it's like a little breach in the wall of the dam. It's not the Gaddafi and his saying, well, let's have some gold standard that's going to break the bank of the Federal Reserve Bank of the U.S. But it is other people who are saying, yes, that's a good idea, and we see it as the only way away from the American hegemony and the only way to break their capacity to destroy the value of our wealth globally by printing their money, and the only way to re-import the inflation that they're currently exporting to the source and origin of the problem, which is the mad American government that we seem to have in place today.
Unfortunately so, and of course that means that what we saw in Libya is, again, just one data point in a much bigger picture that unfortunately continues to unfold. So, again, I think we can use that knowledge that we gained from examining that one particular issue to find out more about what's happening in the world generally, and obviously we'll have to continue to keep our eyes on some of the uppity figures that continue to persist in trying to create alternative currencies or currencies that may be backed by something else, and I think China is currently engaged in that process. But let's turn to a completely different topic. Well, perhaps not completely different. It still involves the same general themes of corruption, bribery, swindles, and people losing hundreds of millions of dollars. In this case, we turn our attention to GlaxoSmithKline, GSK, of course, the UK pharmaceuticals giant, which many people may not have heard. I thought this was a pretty big story, but I didn't see it reported in many places. GlaxoSmithKline was just fined $490 million by China for bribery, and we can take this from BBC News. Quote, China has fined UK pharmaceuticals firm GlaxoSmithKline $490 million, that's £297 million, after a court found it guilty of bribery. The record penalty follows allegations the drug giant paid out bribes to doctors and hospitals in order to have their products promoted. The court gave GSK's former head of Chinese operations, Mark Riley, a suspended 3-year prison sentence, and he is set to be deported. Other GSK executives have also been given suspended jail sentences. And this, amazingly enough, is just one of the ongoing investigations into GSK corruption, including one that is currently undergoing, it is currently undergoing in the UK. We can take this from CNN Money, which notes that British drug giant GlaxoSmithKline has revealed that it is the target of a criminal probe led by United Kingdom fraud investigators. GSK will contribute fully with the investigation by the UK Serious Fraud Office. The company will cooperate fully with the investigation, the company said in a statement issued Tuesday. GSK is committed to operating its business to the highest ethical standards, the statement said. Additional details were not provided in the statement, and a company spokesperson said the firm didn't have further information at the moment. The Serious Fraud Office, which focuses on complex fraud and corruption cases, has not yet issued a public statement regarding the inquiry. So we really have no idea what that's about yet, apparently. But this article goes on to note that GSK has also confirmed it is the subject of a Polish anti-corruption bureau investigation, as well as ongoing investigations into its operations in Jordan and Lebanon. And this is all on top of a 2012 $3 billion fine that it was subjected to by the U.S. Justice Department after failing to report safety data on some of its most popular drugs, which I believe was the largest settlement in U.S. History. So, again, GSK, again and again and again, being investigated and convicted for fraud and bribery and swindling of various sources. David, your take on this?
Well, I think it's absolutely terrific. I mean, if you look at it from the point of view of Lloyd Blankfein and Jamie Dimon, they would be so proud of the chief executive of GlaxoSmithKline that they'll put a strong buy order out on the shares. They say, well, you know, this guy, he has understood the banking business model. He has actually transferred it to a different area where we don't have the expertise, which is namely the pharmaceuticals world. And in the course of it, he has been able to make huge amounts of money. And once again, you know, he will have a private jet, corporate jet, almost as big as the ones that we have, out of doing the same thing to Goldman Sachs, you know, J.P. Morgan and the American people in general. Now, this guy really has got a good idea because he's getting through every door in the world. You know, there are 1.4 billion, I think, Chinese, and he's ripping off each and every one of them. We, unfortunately, are running the banks. You know, we can only rip off, you know, kind of $1 billion hits on little countries like Libya, and there are only 160. But, you know, imagine what you could do over a prolonged period of time with 1.4 billion people. Whose budgets on health obviously increase with the wealth of the country. I mean, this is a fantastic business model, strong buy.
You know, unfortunately, you are exactly correct on this. I mean, obviously, it's just the cost of doing business. And if it does increase overall sales in order to do some of these shenanigans, well, you know, do what you got to do and hope you don't get caught. But if you do, you just pay the price and walk away, as these officials are going to do in China with their suspended jail sentences and deportations, as if that's going to hurt them. But let's dwell on that idea of the stock price, because it's interesting. Immediately after the announcement of this $490 million fine, the stock price for GSK actually went up slightly, because the decision gave clarity as to the future of the company. There was some concern about what would happen, but given that there was clarity with this decision, the stock price recovered somewhat. It has declined somewhat since then, but not significantly so. In fact, it was much greater declines earlier this year when there was still this question of the open investigation in China. So it hasn't really significantly affected the stock price, something that's been noted in a hand-wringy kind of way by, for example, BusinessETC.com, which had a story up, Why GSK Has Been Immune to Ebola Gains, an interesting topic altogether, talking about the general lift on the stock market for a number of companies involved in developing Ebola-related vaccines and or treatments, including Techmira Pharmaceuticals, NewLink Genetics, and ZMapp, etc. They've all seen lifts in their stock prices, while GSK, which is in the final stages of beginning human testing of its vaccine for Ebola, has not seen a similar stock lift. And this article goes into great depth, why is this happening? Why aren't they getting the stock lift? And, you know, they come up with various reasons for this. But it's interesting that, of course, it ultimately boils down to the bottom line. And people seem to not be that concerned about the fact that this pharmaceuticals giant is paying doctors to pimp their products and doing other sorts of unethical practices. Because, again, it's just the cost of doing business. So at the end of the day, this doesn't seem to be hurting the company really significantly at all.
No, I mean, I think in terms of, you know, the settlement would have been largely discounted in the eyes of the investing firms, you know. So the fact there isn't a huge change in the share price doesn't matter, and it's a one-off hit, and it really doesn't matter if it's 500 million or 600 million. It's one-off, and that's it. And then you look at where the company is going forward. But this whole issue, you know, we talk about GSK in China. My goodness, if you go around the world, the pharmaceutical companies are doing this everywhere. I mean, I live in Switzerland, and the number of conferences and events that they organize and accompanied trips for families and all the rest of it for doctors who are prescribing their drugs, and then all of the little advantages that they come around and offer and promote, you know, and this covers the Novartises, this covers the Roche, this covers all of the big names in pharma. I mean, I have to say, I'm absolutely not a pharma specialist beyond, you know, buying pills for a headache after a long night out on the town or something. But, you know, the opportunities for this kind of thing are vast. The margins are vast. And, you know, again, it's the cost of doing business. But the whole issue of share price is reacting to, you know, market conditions. I mean, we jump to another sector, and you look at the military-industrial contractors business, where the share prices have gone up 10% since the beheadings began. I mean, now if you think about it, each beheading in terms of market capitalization is probably worth $10 billion. So there are some people there who have an even bigger invested interest in these kind of grotesque, horrible things going on than anything else. It's a crazy world.
That's crazy, and I hope the viewers aren't just going to gloss over that fact and really dwell on it, that these beheading videos, whether they're real or not, actually increase the bottom line for a number of companies. I mean, there are people who have direct investments in the fear that is created by this. It's a sick system. It is a sick system that we're living in right now, and we are the patient that's suffering through that sickness. But don't worry, because U.S. regulators and investigators are on the job, and they're keeping us safe from all of this fraud, because apparently, according to Dealbook, big banks face another round of U.S. charges. The Justice Department is preparing a fresh round of attacks on the world's biggest banks, again questioning Wall Street's role in a broad array of financial markets. With evidence mounting that a number of foreign and American banks colluded to alter the price of foreign currencies, the largest and least regulated financial market, prosecutors are aiming to file charges against at least one bank by the end of the year, according to interviews with lawyers briefed on the matter. I always love that, briefed on the matter. Those are always the best sources. But I think the article might tip its hand a bit later, where it says the charges will most likely focus on traders and their bosses rather than chief executives. Surprise, surprise. As a result, critics of the Justice Department might view the cases as little more than an exercise in public relations, a final push to shape the legacy of Attorney General Eric Holder, who was blamed for a lack of criminal cases against Wall Street executives. And all I've got to say is that sounds like hitting the bullseye right there. But David, your take.
Well, it is the same thing. I mean, you cannot have a situation where fraud existed for 10 years, let's say, before 2008 when the collapse came along, and the regulators did nothing during that period of any significance. Then the consequences of that fraud became extremely apparent in 2008, and 6 years later, nothing of any significance has been done. As you say, you know, they dump on some trader who is nothing more than a guy trying to execute the instructions that come from above. You know, it's like blaming the soldier on the front line after he's been told to shoot, and the generals say, "Well, we weren't there." You know, goodness me, did he actually shoot a gun? So the whole thing's a farce. I mean, the Attorney General, I think, is probably one of the worst they've ever had. He's certainly been completely unethical. He has been a reverse racist in many issues where he should have actually taken a position to stop the abuses that were going on. He has been a fast and furious failure, I think we could say, to quote his own terminology. But it is typical of a totally corrupt Obama White House. I mean, if you see Obama, he has managed to bomb more Muslim countries, having been awarded the Nobel Peace Prize, than most people who never got a Peace Prize had managed to do. So it seems that the criteria of success for nowadays for a Peace Prize in this upside-down world is how many people have you bombed and killed. And the whole thing is dramatically bad. And I will be very happy to see Mr. Holder leave and do a Timothy Geithner, no doubt, and write his memoirs and go back as an overpaid senior partner of a big law firm, where he uses his influence to an inside knowledge of cases to make sure that there are no prosecutions and such like things, which is basically par for the course once again in the corrupt, crony capitalistic American system that exists today.
Well, you raise an interesting point, because I guess Kissinger only won the Peace Prize for bombing Vietnam openly and Cambodia secretly and illegally, not to mention what he did in Chile and elsewhere, but Obama has been involved in many more countries, hasn't he? So he's really earned his Peace Prize. Again, just another sad indictment of the world system that we're living under at the moment, and I think it's important for all of us to come out strongly against this PR campaign for Holder, this idea that this Justice Department investigation that's going to throw a few traitors under the bus is somehow going to really be justice for what happened in the absolute swindle that has occurred and is still occurring as a result of the 2008 bubble popping. Just an absolute crazy series of events that has led us here, and really fueled by a lot of ignorance, yes, some of it willful ignorance on the part of the public, a lot of misinformation, and unfortunately, again, I think that this is systemic in every possible way. So we've done a whirlwind tour of a lot of these cases, and unfortunately I have to get going, so we will have to end the conversation at this point. But David L. Smith, why don't you direct people to your coordinates once again and tell them about your services?
Yes, sure. Well, you can find me on the GenevaBusinessInsider.blogspot.com. I run a Geneva-based financial advisory company. I don't give investment advice, but it's general financial advice. And you can find this interview and many others with James and other people on my website. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, then, until next month, I think we'll leave it there. David L. Smith, always a pleasure talking to you. Have a great day there in Geneva.
Good to be here under the rain in Geneva. Thank you. Bye.